What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we're going to talk about a bunch of fresh new books that come out this very Wednesday.
Today, you can get them right now.
We got mostly beginnings. We got some endings as well, specifically one ending, but a ton of number one books for you that are number one in my book. How was that? Was that good?
Yeah, was that an audition, right?
Yeah, no, I'm hoping to get this podcast.
Yeah, no, you have the lead spot in this podcast.
Oh, man, that's officially amazing. I've been angling for that for years, so
you're the star.
hey, you're the star. Let's jump into it because we got a ton of titles to talk about. Infinity War Prime. Infinity Wars Prime, number one. Yeah. I've been messing up this for
Get your S's right. So, there's been a couple Infinity Wars. So
yeah, so we had Infinity Countdown.
Yeah.
And then that leads to Infinity Wars Prime.
Correct.
Which is going to lead into Infinity Wars.
I think you're absolutely right.
There we go. What'd you think about this book, Justin?
This was fun. This definitely feels like the beginning. Like the countdown felt like it was
the Prime issue, if you will.
Indeed. The countdown felt like it was sort of like tying up other storylines,
sure,
or really like putting the chess pieces on the board. This definitely feels like the beginning of a massive crossover, even though it's not technically the beginning because it's not the number one issue of the actual crossover.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that comic book creators, comic book companies are trying to trick us with number ones.
You think
so? Have
you
ever thought this before?
Maybe. Is that why they keep rebooting them? I've never really thought about that ever before.
You talked about beginnings and ends. It's funny that so much of comic books is about like, hey, something new coming at you. When people tell a story, like, you don't want to just hear a bunch of beginnings. You want to see some ends.
Except comics, I mean, if we want to talk about this seriously, comics are nonstop, never ending. I mean, this is something we talk about with events a lot. One of my big pet peeves about events is they never end. They just tee up the next big event, particularly when it comes to Marvel and DC. And so you don't really, usually, with some exceptions, get a complete story over the course of an event comic book, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this issue in particular. I will say one thing that has characterized this. First of all, Jerry Duggan has stepped up his writing big time.
Yeah.
Not that he's been shabby at all.
Yeah,
but
not too shabby.
It's rough to write an event. Like it is a different skill level. It is a different set of skills. And I think he is doing a good job with this. It feels big.
Definitely. And I love, like a lot of the better events, it sort of starts small. It starts with a couple characters just realizing that something horrible has happened. And we have that in this issue with Doctor Strange and Adam Warlock, who is they're coming out of, they both have Infinity Gems, the Soul Gem and the Time Gem. They're stones, excuse me.
Don't get that wrong.
That's a horrible mistake.
Yep.
A gem's just a tiny stone. So it's great that they've been able to...
Gems, just a tiny stone.
They've been able... a little tour of Broadway with Alex Zalman. It's great that they've been able to upgrade the value of the stones.
Yeah, 100%. I have a question for you because I'm getting a little confused about this. So we talked about how with Infinity Countdown number 5, that was the last one,
I believe,
right?
So
Doctor Strange was like, the Infinity Stones must never be brought together.
Right.
And then the issue ended with him saying, we must gather the Infinity Watch, get all the Infinity Stones together.
Yes.
And then this issue, he's telling Adam Warlock, we must never bring the Infinity Stones together. Do not gather the Infinity Watch. What's going on? Am I missing something?
I believe this happened before he gathered the watch.
Okay.
That's a guess. Because I was thinking the same thing as I was reading this. I think this is a step back, and this is maybe what was prompting him to gather the Infinity Watch.
Okay.
Because we see later, we get to Thanos, popular man associated with the stones.
Huge character.
A collector of the stones.
Yes.
He's a stone completist. He doesn't want to miss a stone.
He's like a comic book fan.
Exactly. I think that's the real analog there. I mean, imagine you buy a gauntlet and you're like, six spots. Oh, man.
You get like 15 green stones while you're collecting it, and you're like, all I want is the purple stone. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. But the purple stone is rare, and you got to buy all those packs of stones before you can get the purple stone.
Exactly. You get it. So anyway, we get to see Thanos. He's like, they're gathering the stones. So to me, this issue is sort of happening a little bit before and then concurrently with the last issue of Countdown.
All right. Okay. That makes a little bit of sense. But not much sense, but a little bit of sense.
Honestly, I was thinking as I was reading this, Doctor Strange with the Time Stone is such a fun idea. Like, I'd love to see that series for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. This to me, like a lot of Marvel stuff, is sort of lightly connecting it to the movies, like Doctor Strange with the Time Stone, of course, because he also has it in Avengers Infinity War, yeah. But it's not exactly one-to-one, so you get to see some of those touches from the movies weaved into the Marvel Universe proper. Let's talk about the ending of the book. Let's spoil the ending of the book. You want to do that?
Yes, let's do it.
So, end of the book, Thanos, of course, is like, I'm going to gather the Infinity Stones. We're going to crush the universe. They belong to me. And then this new character, maybe new character, named Requiem, comes out with a big-ass sword, cuts him right through the middle, cuts off his head, and he's like, finally, I'm dead.
Yeah, he's happy. It's great.
Yes. So, a couple of questions there. One, do you think Thanos is really dead? Two, how'd you feel about that moment? And three, who do you think Requiem is?
Well, I'm going to take those back to front. Gamora's the obvious pick.
Yeah, just because her eyes look the same as the Requiem mask?
There was a green, a lot of green. She's green.
Sure.
She hates Thanos, always has.
I will mention, a couple of fans freaked out because there was an ad for Asgardians of the Galaxy, which is spinning out of Infinity Wars, where they said, finally, Nebula is stepping up and taking over the universe, and only the Asgardians of the Galaxy can stop her. My take on that, though, is that she's the villain for that series. Like, she's not the villain for Infinity.
I agree with you. It could be Nebula is another great pick, potentially, as this killer. I did like the moment. I thought it was a nice way. When we cut to Thanos in this comic, it felt like, oh, of course, Thanos is going to be the guy to gather the stones. He's the number one stone guy. So I like this sort of misdirect. And I would like it if Thanos was dead for this. Like, let's leave him out.
Yeah, I think
I'd like to see little dates.
I got to tell you, I had the opposite reaction to Thanos dying. Thanos?
I say Thanos.
I think it's Thanos. Hmm? Oh, whatever.
Come and get me, Thanos.
Thanos. I don't know. They should make a whole movie just about how to pronounce it.
Are we talking about different guys?
Yeah, maybe it's different characters. Yeah. Well, I will say, as like a side thing, they do talk a lot about how he is, he gathers the reality, he gathers the stones in any reality. And Loki begins the book talking about how pages are missing, the story is wrong, they're being all brought together. So I think we're going to deal with a lot of different realities here. So that's how they're going to bring folks like Thanos back by the end of Infinity Wars. But I was kind of bummed out just because I feel like the way you set the stakes for these sort of stories is always the new bad guy comes in and takes out the big bad and kills a bunch of people. So it was a cool moment. It's fun to see Thanos get his head chopped off and all of the Chitauri get destroyed. But at the same time, that seems like very rote storytelling to me at the beginning of an event, personally.
Right. I would also argue, though, having Thanos just be the villain would be pretty predictable as well. So maybe we're going to see a different kind of story in which, I've talked about this before, it's Infinity Wars. So I feel like it's going to be just a battle where these stones keep changing hands, and whoever sort of is holding them when it comes to a head, maybe when Thanos returns at the end of the series, then we're going to see what happens.
Oh, so it's like a game of hot potato.
Exactly. Hot potatoes.
Nice. Let's move on. Talk about Action Comics 1001 from DC Comics. Now, in case you didn't realize it, Brian Michael Bendis is writing two titles, Superman and Action Comics. Superman seems to be a little bit more on the cosmic bent as Superman heads out into the universe to look for his missing family. Action Comics is set here on Earth. It's dealing with a rash of fires that is bringing Metropolis to its knees.
Yeah.
So slightly different focuses here. What do you think about this book?
Well, there's something about Superman and this firefighter have had this like flirtation, and we finally learned that Lois is just gone. Like, their marriage isn't like broken up, really. Like, they're just split through space. So it's not like he's on the market ready to date, right?
Yeah, he's not single and ready to mingle.
Yeah, so like this the relationship that Bendis keeps poking at here, I don't know, something about it bothers me.
Yeah, I also don't understand because we don't live there, but the DC Comics characters live in a universe where aliens exist, people are going to space all the time. So for Lois to come up with a story where she's like, I'm taking a trip with one of the last Kryptonians to the farthest reaches of space, and then I'm going to write a book about it. seems reasonable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she could do that, and that's okay.
It's a cool assignment.
Yeah, it's a cool assignment, and nobody would bat an eye at all.
Yeah.
Except for Batman.
Bat an eyelash?
Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
just Batman.
Just Batman. Just Batman and eyelash. Yeah, I agree with you. So there's something a little weird. Though we see the villains, the quote-unquote villains, maybe, that we are revealed here, are hiding in a lead tube. Where they have their secret meetings, and we don't really know what's going on here, right? They're like a group of, a cabal of bad guys who don't like Superman, and they're setting the fires.
Yeah, I would say, in a weird way, I like this better than Superman number one.
Interesting.
To me, it felt like this is where Bendis is really getting his stride, writing Superman. It's not too flashy. It didn't feel like, hey, I'm writing Superman, I'm Brian Michael Bendis. It more felt part and parcel of the book. And also you get, you know, superpowered cabal of baddies. It's very like the Hood and his gang from all of his Marvel work. So there's a comfort level there. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I enjoyed the writing. I think the mystery is interesting. I'm curious to see how they make this dangerous for Superman. I agree with you about the relationship stuff, but, you know, sometimes, as we learned from the hit movie When Harry Met Sally, men and women when can Harry be
met
friends.
When Harry Met Sally?
Yes.
He finally got paid.
Yeah, when Harry Met Sally, he got paid 25% more than Sally. Did you know that?
I'll have the money that he's having.
I get it.
Well, let me just say one other thing. Like, I agree with you. I did like this book. The relationship stuff bothers me a little bit, but there's something about, I guess my expectations were higher for Bendis' run, and not to say, I mean, it's only a little bit into it, so keep reading, we're all reserving judgment a little bit, but it doesn't feel like a big swing yet.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? So I'm waiting to hear, sort of to read what the big swing is.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. Moving over to Dynamite Comics, this is a title coming out August 1st, Project Superpowers, number one. Now, I don't know if you read the Project Superpowers books back in the day. There's a big overarching, not just one series, but multiple series that all tied together, telling the story of these kind of 1950s superheroes that were sucked into the modern day. Now we're getting a reboot of it. They're all in the same title. What did you think about this, Justin?
This felt fun. It felt like sort of an event. It's a take on the Avengers characters, like these big godlike heroes who are here to save the world when it's when the big stuff comes to take us down. And it was a well done issue. I think we got to meet all the characters. The plight where all of the airplanes in the world are struck by a purple lightning and they fall to Earth, and everyone jumps in and tries to rescue everyone was fun. Then we meet a young hero who takes the mantle of the flag person.
We know these characters very well.
Well, no, I do know the other ones, but like Samson, Masquerade.
No, I don't. I read most of the Project Superpowers titles back in the day, and I cannot remember a single thing, so I'm not making fun of you at all.
A little bit.
A little bit. Generally speaking, I think this was fine. There were a couple of weird bits to me, particularly. It felt like it was setting up this idea of these characters have put away being heroes for a while. They're trying to get on with their lives. But as soon as the plane crash thing happened, they immediately switched into, nope, we're all in our costumes. We're fighting crime. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So there's very much two halves of the issue. I like the second half of the issue better. There's an interesting mystery going on.
Yeah.
There's a tease of a villain. As you said, we get to meet a new character. So this is fun. This is lighthearted. It's very different characters than your regular DC or Marvel books.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a new superhero universe, I think it's a good one to jump into.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. Moving on to our big ending, except not really.
Whoop.
Descender number 32 from Image Comics. Now, if you haven't been reading this, this is a story from Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen about a universe where robots had killed nearly the entire population of humanity. Over the course of the 32 issues of the series, they've tried to figure out why and how this happened. We are entering this last ending arc where the gigantic robots, the harvesters that destroyed the universe to begin with, are back, and we get kind of a sort of a resolution to the story, except not really. You've been a big fan of the series, Justin.
I love this series. I feel like it's been very unique. It's one of those series where everyone's a little bit bad. Like, not everyone makes mistakes, even our protagonists, except for the our the kid robot Tim, who is the innocent at the center of it all. So it's been a fun read because you don't really ever know what's going to happen. And this ending, it was interesting reading the back matter. Jeff Lemire talks about how this wasn't the ending he intended, but as he was writing it, this sort of felt right. And the things he discovered in the writing led him to end it where he did and begin a new series that's coming out in 6 months called Ascender, which will...
I get it.
Yeah, which will pick up and bring in where this was like sci-fi tech space. The next one will be sci-fi fantasy magic. So I think that is a really interesting take. It feels like playing Final Fantasy III when after the world breaks in the middle of that, the survivors have to come back together and save the world again.
I don't get that, but I appreciate it.
Final Fantasy is a video game.
A what?
A video game?
I'm not familiar.
Okay. Well, I'll show you a cell phone.
Oh, okay. What?
Oh, man.
Yeah, this series is fantastic. I mean, you pretty much covered it, but it's absolutely gorgeous to look at. Don't jump in here if you haven't read it so far. But they really don't shy away from some apocalyptic big choices right here at the end.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, the tease at the end of the issue for Ascender, I thought was... fantastic and made me really excited about the series, even more so than I have been in a really long time.
Agreed. I would say start from the beginning and read the shit out of this.
Speaking of starting from beginnings, let's move on with Bone Parish number one, which is coming to you from Boom Studios, written by Cullen Bunn. I thought this series was great. I was very surprised by it.
Yeah.
The concept of the book is it takes place in New Orleans, right?
Probably, like most things.
90% of the things we talk about take place in New Orleans. This is a world where people have figured out how to turn corpses' bones into drugs. You snort their bones, which are called ash, and basically you get to live part of that person's life or experience the ghosts of their life, so to speak.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, things go a little wrong.
Yeah. I will say, though, I really like the way this is written. It comes, it's very, like, down-to-earth take. Like, it feels like these people are just like they're a family, and the family business is creating this drug and they're selling it to people, and people have a real taste for it. Like, everyone is not like, whoa, are you saying this is made out of dead bodies? Like, we don't have that reaction. I think it's great. It really feels like we're in the world with these characters, and there's a couple fun reveals, and I love it as well.
Yeah. Cullen Bunn, if you haven't been reading his stuff, you may be more familiar with his Marvel and DC work, which I think is uniformly pretty good.
Yeah.
But the horror stuff he's been writing for Boom and other publishers is superb. It always has a really good, sharp concept to it. There's actual horror that gets weaved in, both psychological and actual physical, and it's great. So if you're looking for a new title to pick up, particularly if you like crime books or supernatural books, Bone Parish.
Or if you're making a drug out of dead bodies, like this would be
it's basically an instruction manual.
Yeah, exactly. So check it out, and good luck with your future disinterment endeavors.
Here is another new number one, this one from Image Comics, The New World. Number one. This is by Alice Cott, and art by Trad Moore, who you probably know from the Luther Strode series.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest about something.
Please, this is a venue for you to be honest.
Great.
Alex, be honest.
I'll tell you what. I liked some of Alice Cott stuff, and some of it I've had an enormous amount of trouble getting into. It's very dense. It's very esoteric. It's very dreamlike sometimes in terms of how he writes. And I've been off of it a little bit.
Yeah.
But this book I thought was great.
I agree. I thought this is a fun, it's a world that we sort of have to step into a little bit. It's set in a future where everything sucks for everyone in America. And,
oh, so a present.
It's sort of a present, but with some different stuff happening, I guess you could say.
A bunch of nuclear bombs blow up most of America, separate it into a bunch of different warring areas. For a little bit, I thought this was going to be like East of West, but basically the same comic book. But it's not. It's set in California, which is now this authoritarian dystopia where, I mean, you know how it works. It's, you have the people living on the downside who are like having fun and they're all dressed like crazy warrior people. And then there's the people who live on the big side who are like straight out of the capital, the Hunger Games. It's a riff on a bunch of other things. It mashes up a ton of ideas. Yeah. There's a bit of Running Man in there as well, because it focuses on this super cop who's the most popular cop of the TV show, where she tracks down and is supposed to kill criminals.
People vote American Idol style on their phones whether the person, the criminal that she's caught, and there's a, she has a rival guardian as well, would live or die. She always lets them live no matter what people vote for. That gets her into some trouble. We get a flash of sort of how her life has went, wasn't good, of trying to escape into Mexico when all this bad stuff was happening.
Yeah, there's a wall there which seems related to something going on in the world today, but I don't know what it is.
It's hard to say. I can't really remember anyone talking about a wall or whether or not we should build it.
Sure, sure.
On the other side of the story is this character who lives with his father, who likes to drink a lot. They seem like they're a little bit more into like treating their bodies right, taking care of each other. And So he sets off an EMP that takes down the network that broadcasts this cop, this very real-life cop show. And then they end up hooking up in a club at night. So it has this, like, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And where the book, the first issue ends, I thought was, like, super fun. And the romance aspect of it, I love.
Yeah, and Trad Moore's art is awesome.
So good.
So good. So clean. So different than anything else on the stands. This is a weird future world that seems immediately accessible at the same time, and it looks like it's going to be uber violent. It looks like it's going to be very relevant for today, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Another one coming out August 1st. This one is from Dark Horse, The Seeds, number one. What'd you think about this book?
So if you're sick of dystopia based on what we just talked about, there's more coming your way.
Sure is.
So this also deals with a wall and zone A and zone B, two sides of the wall. And the split here is about technology. On one side of the wall, no one uses technology of any kind. On the other side, everyone does, and everyone seems to be living, you know, the best life they can make of it. This to me felt like 12 Monkeys if it was made by Richard Linklater.
Ooh.
It felt very much like those rotoscoped Linklater movies, where it's just these characters really putting their philosophies out there. Where we meet a couple characters, a reporter, a couple that hooks up, one guy wearing a gas mask, and the characters wearing the gas masks have been hanging out in the anti-technology zone, and they're talking a lot about gathering seeds, gathering data, exterminating humans. We get a reveal later on that these are aliens who have come to Earth and are it's a little unclear. An alien hooked up with this girl, and we don't know. Their intentions seem to be not great for humanity.
Yeah, and this is by David Aja and Anne Nesenti, and the character designs in particular I thought were really interesting,
yeah, very cool.
Unique. It was clear who every character was. They don't look like a lot of the other characters on the stands, even the alien ones. There's a lot of weird, disturbing imagery in it. So versus The New World, which is a bit more of a fun, over-the-top take, this is a little more serious, even with the alien stuff.
And there's a lot of philosophy in it, and I thought it was, I liked this book. I'll pick up the next issue. Like, it definitely feels like we're going to get a lot of ideas out here, and characters just sort of telling us what they think.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Let's move on to a DC comic. Big launch today, Justice League Dark, number one. This is written by James Tynion IV, who late wrote Detective Comics, which we loved.
Great run
so
on Detective
good.
Comics.
Now he's moving over to DC's Magic Team. As you'd probably expect, a lot of this issue is about gathering the team. Wonder Woman wants to get the team together because since they broke the source wall, things have been going weird with magic. Bad things have been happening to people's bodies. On the other side of the thing, all the magic users are like, no, let's take care of it. We're going to take care of it ourselves. And Zatanna and John Constantine are kind of caught in the middle of things.
Yeah.
So the reason I brought up Detective Comics is this flows very nicely off of that for me.
Yeah.
Again, he does a really good job of just balancing all the aspects of a team while still making it a lot of fun.
Yeah, James Tynion has a great sort of ear for making characters' dialogue pop and be very specific to them. So I think this was a really good version of that. And we get to meet all the characters, like you're saying, and the stakes seem pretty dire for the magic users. I like a lot of the characters in here. Swamp Thing, Constantine, Wonder Woman, Zatanna, Detective Chimp is fun. The thing that I reading this, I was reminded of is it's called The Last Days of Magic. It's part of the issue is set in a bar that exists outside of the world where magic users go to. And that same stuff is in the Marvel Universe. It was the recent run on Doctor Strange, and it sort of all sprung out of this magic bar.
So that dates back to, I'm completely blanking on the name of the title, but there was a magic team up book with Blue Devil and Detective Chimp and a couple of other folks when they introduced the Oblivion Bar. So that was years ago.
I believe that was Justice League Dark.
Was it the original Justice League
Dark? I believe
Dark?
So, yeah.
Wait, wasn't it called like Seven something?
The Seven Soldiers?
Yeah, maybe.
The crossover?
Yeah.
The Grant Morrison stuff?
I mean,
all of these things are true. And I'm not saying that this is in any way.
It's too bad we don't have access to the internet, by the way, so we can look it up.
But I'm not saying. I only use my memory. The ultimate internet happens inside each of our brains. Don't comment on your own brain. I'm saying that I'm not blaming it. I think these things have existed in both Marvel and DC continuity.
Sure.
But it's just funny to me that they are all, we're hitting on these same.
Shadow Pact. That was the name of
the book. Shadow Pact. Yes, that's true. We're hitting all of these things over and over again. It feels, it just all starts to run together eventually.
I get it. I mean, I definitely had that feeling from the magic is dying and something is coming to eat it, which is a plot that I think happens in every single magic book that I've ever read. But the things that made it elevated above that is, one, like you said, the character voices. I love the scene with Wonder Woman and Detective Chimp just hanging out at the Oblivion Bar. So much fun.
Man-Bat stuff was really fun.
The Man-Bat stuff is great. To me, he is clearly the breakout character, just like Clayface was in Detective Comics.
Yeah, for sure.
Easily, just all the stuff going on with him. It's so clear what his character arc is and what his redemption arc needs to be like.
Yeah.
And the tease of the Upside Down Man, the villain, by the end of the issue is horrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrifying. So it's great stuff. I can't wait to read
more. A lot of great ideas. Definitely going to pick this up.
Last but not least, Marvel Comics is a big launch. I think you're probably excited about.
Yeah, you know it.
Mr. and Mrs. X, number one. Now, we got to see in X-Men Gold number 30 that the wedding of Kitty Pryde and Colossus was never meant to be.
There's a class. This happens all the time, you guys. It's a classic. They stole the wedding right out from the other couple. I got married at a stolen wedding. Stole a wedding with someone else. Yeah.
Me too.
It happens all the time.
I was like, hey, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's be total dicks.
It's a great way to save on costs. Just break up the couple having a wedding and get in there and take it.
Oh, my God. It boggles my mind. I mean, granted, everybody in this issue, at least, is like, yeah, Geb, it's a dick, whatever, we get it.
Yeah.
But the idea of being like, oh, you're not getting married, we're going to jump into here and get married, is so rude.
Yeah.
So rude.
They have all the same friends. The hors d'oeuvres were already there. Like, why not do it?
Yes, but this issue jumps back in time and it shows us what happened during Rogue and Gambit's wedding night, which we only got to see a little blip of in X-Men Gold number 30.
Yeah.
Goes beyond that to the honeymoon, which, as of course, is abbreviated, interrupted by an intergalactic threat. And we get a nice tease at the end. Did you read the Rogue and Gambit series by Kelly Thompson?
Yeah, I did. It was fun. I think the big part about this that I thought was so great was it's a fun title. Like, these characters are all having fun. The characters, all the other X-Men who are at the wedding, I'll have some great like chip in lines and commentary. They're looking for the stuff for Rogue to have, like something borrowed, something blue. And Mystique shows up and she's like, I'll be blue if you'll have me. And like, I was like, I'm blue also. It's so sad.
It's not to sound like an 80-year-old man, but it's very cheeky throughout. Like,
oh, little cheeky.
Ooh, it is. It is the way it's written, though, where it's like it's very winky about everything. There's a scene I cannot believe they got away with towards the middle of the issue. They're on their honeymoon. Rogue and Gambit are in a spaceship, and they're clearly fucking, like, straight up, like, almost naked.
Space sex.
There's just a sheet draped over them. And clearly they wrote a scene where, like, they're having very, for a PG comic, graphic sex.
Yeah.
And then get up naked and walk towards camera. And then they rewrote it to be about tickling.
Yeah.
Like, and that's crazy to me. That's crazy to me that they got away with that in a mainstream comic book. Like, do you think they originally wrote it as a sex scene?
As a hardcore sex scene?
And then they were you can't do that.
I feel like they know what they could get away with.
I don't know. Whatever it is, it blew my mind that they did that. And I feel like they've been doing...
Well, what are you going to do with all of your fan fiction now?
Burn it.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It's useless.
I was going to say publish it.
Because,
I'd say you have a spot. There's a gap here that you
do
can...
Do you think Marvel will let me do that? Just walk into their offices and start publishing a Rogue and Gambit book?
I think there's only one way to find out.
Get in there,
demand it. Just like Martin Luther pounded those Christian things on that door so long ago. You should go in there and pound
Here's what I'm saying, though, is that it was the same thing with the Rogue and the Gambit series, where they really pushed the envelope in the most ridiculous way, and it's a lot... It's a lot of fun to read. It's very winky like that. It's cheeky, if you will.
It's cheeky. It's cool. It's interesting. I'll translate Alex's 1950s speak to, like, it's fresh. It's lit. Yeah, and then someone else can translate my 6 months ago language.
It's Wizard.
What?
Wizard.
Okay, cool.
Phantom Menace fan?
I don't know.
No?
The Phantom Menace?
Yeah. The movie?
The prequel?
Yeah.
Oh.
Great movie.
I feel like people are letting that movie pass now.
I think they are. I think there's been a reevaluation, and I think they're wrong.
Agreed.
And that's a review of Star Wars The Phantom Menace, you guys. If you'd like to support this show and other shows, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft in New York. Come on by. Totally free. Justin, what else do you want to plug?
You can follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and many more podcasts. We'll see you at the comic book shop.
If anyone knows where Pete is, he went on vacation and we haven't heard from him. So if he is just bothering you at a beach party or something, please let us know.
I heard he went into the woods. I know he went for a woods vacation. There was something he was saying about eating human meat and then turning into a Wendigo.
Yeah, he was so close to being a Wendigo before he left. It's great that he's finally finished the transformation.
We're proud of you, Peter.